Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Listen to Inside the Park. Inside the park. The RSG family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just going to jump right into it. I always come to
gambling. What do you think about gambling?
It's
not gambling when you know you're
going to
win.
He's not coming out. Wait. The RSG family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. Welcome to another week of Inside the Park. We got the RSG family is in full effect this week. We had to make a call to the bullpen, though. We needed a pinch hitter. Our usual suspect, Mike, is out this week. So we had to call in some favors. Devon, you out there?
Hey, I'm out here. I'm happy. You know, this is a dream come true with this show. And fellas, I'm glad to be on the run with y'all tonight and to be part of it.
Devon, it's good to have you, brother. Devon's going to be shedding some of his baseball knowledge. Devon goes way back with the baseball, and he gives Inside the Park a little bit of credit for getting him back into the sport. So we're going to test him out a little bit, let him run around the bases and see what he still got. But don't fret, we still got Hank. Hank's online. Hank, say what's up to the people.
Hey, how y'all doing? I love baseball season, nice early season, but I'm going to tell you right now, under no circumstances, under injury, should Gerald Laird and Brandon Inns be batting back-to-back. That's just.
You know what? I just saw that, and I was biting my lip. But, hey, what are you going to do? Brandon Inns shouldn't be on a major league lineup. But
I don't know how many softball teams he'd be on right now, I'll be honest with you.
That's right. But we're not going to waste y'all time talking all this intricate Detroit baseball. We got a slamming show for you this week. We're going to try to measure up from what we did last week. We had Jonah Carey on. If you missed it, definitely go to the Real Sports Guys website, check that interview out, or you can download it on iTunes. It was a great show. If you missed that one, definitely check it out. We're just going to try to duplicate it tonight. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into Around the Horn. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about, fellas. Devon, you familiar with the movie that came out not too long ago, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Yeah.
I think Bobby Valentine is trying to replicate that movie in Boston. I think he's trying to put together a book on how to lose a team in 10 games. It's unbelievable what was going on in Boston. If you haven't heard, there's a bit of a mutiny going on. Bobby Valentine came out with some quotes to the Boston media, and he said that Kevin Youkilis has not been physically or emotionally into the game. And I don't know what managerial book he pulled that bit of motivational tactic out of the bag, but it didn't go over too well in Boston. I mean, Yuke is a beloved guy. He helped them win two World Series. The fans didn't like it. You got to believe the players didn't like it. Hank, what's going on in Boston, brother?
Well, you know what? We talked a little bit last week, and actually we talked about our preview about Boston. First of all, this is par for the course for Bobby Valentine. You know, he has a knack for losing his team early, and then getting on getting the cameras in his face and saying that. It's not him, or he was misquoted, or he's got to go apologize to this player or that player. And he did the same thing with Kevin Youkilis, But I believe that, with Boston. Boston has got a problem. I still think Boston has got a hangover from last year. You know, you let Texas hang 18 runs on you last year, and I don't know what Valentine was thinking. He let that poor pitcher sit out there and give up 11 earned runs. They just bombing him all over. You know, after these, you know, this is after these comments come out. So, you know, I think you about to see something. You got to see Peyton Place over there in Beantown.
Oh yeah, they didn't have a good showing after the comments. I think they lost like 17-5 or 17-3 or something like that to Texas. But it's bad up there. I mean, you've got players against the manager. You've got fans against the manager. There's been reports that the general manager, who just hired Bobby Valentine, is pretty sick of Bobby Valentine shenanigans. Devon, I know we were going back and forth on the email, and you were saying you couldn't wait to get into this subject. What say you? What's going on in Boston?
Well, I'm going to start this, and I'm about to take another angle. First of all, I'll say I agree that Bobby, they knew what they were getting when they got Bobby. So it's not – I hate when people – it's like when you date somebody and you know something's wrong, but you think you can change them. and it's not Bobby, because Bobby's always been Bobby.
Right.
And he's not doing anything that's different. So to react crazy – and be upset, and you knew what you were buying when you brought him in, and people already were speculating from the beginning that these issues could happen. But the part that I want to be very critical of is Dustin Pedroia, and everybody trying to give him credit for, you know, this may not, you know, these are things you probably do in Japan, but that's not going to work around here. This is not the way we do it around here. The way y'all do it around here is y'all eat chicken and drink beer in the clubhouse, and y'all crash in September. That's last time I looked. That's what y'all do in Boston. So don't act like y'all been doing what y'all supposed to be doing. And I'm surprised a lot of people didn't jump down his throat, because these players have no – if they were doing what they're supposed to be doing, Francona would still be there. He wouldn't have to come back for a celebration of 100 years of Fenway, and rather than just being there on the field and being part of the celebration if y'all players have done what you do. So – I hate when players complain about something they could have had control over in the first place just by taking care of business. So that part, I think, you know, as Hank was saying, that hangover in the fact that the players have never taken accountability for what they've been doing. And I always find ways externally blaming whether or not it's, you know, we're not, people need to keep it in the clubhouse, all these other things, rather than saying we've been messing up and we need to change our act. And that's the part that bothered me the most about this. Not as much Bobby. Yeah, Bobby shouldn't have done that. But the players continue to find external reasons for why they're not succeeding.
Did we lose you, D?
Oh, I'm here. You got me?
Okay. Yeah, going out.
Oh, you know, I just had to drop it on that one. I couldn't say nobody.
You dropped the mic. I'll come into America, huh?
Yeah, I dropped the mic. I dropped the mic like Eminem on the Hip Hop Awards. I just dropped it.
Well, pick it back up, because I need to come back at you with something. I got to get you. We got to dig deeper into this. But like you said, for the listeners who didn't hear what Pedroia said, he came back at him at Bobby Valentine with a couple undercut, a couple jabs to the throat. He told him, you know, through the media, of course, he doesn't know how Bobby Valentine did it in Japan, but his ways of motivating don't work over here. Mm-hmm. And I hear you taking Pedroia to task, but Bobby Valentine was the fire starter for all this. Last year they had that issue with the chicken, with the beer, and the main issue is that it got out. In every locker room, they drink beer, they eat chicken. This is nothing that doesn't happen. There have been many games where pitchers who are not in the game go to the clubhouse and eat and drink. I don't think that it's really a big deal. It's just, you know, when you pick up the veil and fans get to see what really goes on behind the scenes, you want to overreact when your team's not doing well. When they're doing well, it's all good. That being the case, the issue was that it got out, and Bobby Valentine seems to be recreating that whole scene from last year. If he had a problem with Uke, or if he didn't think Uke was into the game physically or mentally, he should have gone to Euclid. By him not doing that and going to the media in Boston, who was already looking for something to pounce on with his team, who was struggling at the time, it's a recipe for disaster. So yeah,
RJ, I would come back at you and say, I think he was asked a question, wasn't he, about what's going on with Euclid? And I think he said in his defense that he was saying, you know, about his swing is that maybe he wasn't being as aggressive. He might not be. So he was talking about, in his defense, he was asked about Euclid. Tommy Valentine is somebody who's going to respond. And in his response, it maybe he wasn't most effective in his communication. His response was that these may be the things behind why he's not swinging the bat as much. Because I've seen him be more aggressive than this.
Listen,
so,
you can say his swing is off. You can say that to the media. You can say he doesn't look right at the plate. You cannot challenge that man and the work that he puts in the off season by saying he didn't come in physically or emotionally prepared. Can't do that.
Well,
can't do that.
But the other thing you can look at this is, if I'm a manager, there might be certain people that I try to motivate. You don't know how Bobby Valentine's coming in, but the bottom line is, you can say chicken and beer is just practice, but that works when you win it. There's a lot of things you can do when you win it. When you lose it, you got to acknowledge that there's some things we got to shore up. Maybe for a week, we're not drinking chicken. We're not drinking beer and eating chicken. We're going to do stuff. So there's things that players can do to organize themselves. Something happened in terms of their leadership and their voice in that locker room. And that still hasn't been replaced. So Bobby Valentine becomes the mask for the real issues they got in that department, in that clubhouse. And the big thing is that they don't have any leaders.
But
no one stepping up and holding each other accountable.
I agree with you there, because from what you're talking about, and I watched, before I even knew these comments was out there, I watched Kevin Euclid's play last night. And he don't look like, be honest with you, he don't look like he's mentally prepared. He don't look like he's physically prepared to play. And that's just from the eyeball test. So if you look at Bobby Valentine, he's had these guys all spring, okay? And once again, let it not be lost on anybody. Boston did not start off strong, okay? They still having some of the same problems they had from last year without Frank Conan, so they can't blame him. Epstein is gone, all right? So at some point, you know, when are the players – you're absolutely right, Devon. When are they going to look back on themselves? Now, because they asked Bobby Valentine the question, and I'm not absolving Bobby Valentine, okay, there's just certain ways you say certain things to the media. But yet and still, anybody watching the Boston Red Sox will tell you that they are playing as well as they should be. And that goes beyond whoever is managing that team.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the nail on the head. The numbers don't lie. Something's up with Euclid. But to Devon's point, it's like Bobby Valentine, in his attempt to motivate, skipped a whole bunch of steps and went to the big step. It's like if you got a leaky faucet, rather than going up under the faucet and trying to tighten up a pipe, Bobby Valentine went and dug up the front yard and tried to turn the water back on. If you're trying to motivate a guy and he's just not getting it, cool, then you go into the media. I mean, but he could have gone to Euclid. He could have had the hidden coach talk to him. I mean, there are a lot of steps to take before you go to the media with some. I mean, these are almost personal attacks. You're attacking what I do in the off season to get ready to play. Can't happen. You're gonna lose. That is how you lose the locker room.
Well, he still ain't playing worth the crap. I mean, he's missing plays early in the year, and you would think that this team right now in the East would be ready to play. In the American League, would be ready to play, and they're not.
I agree. They're not ready to play, but you can't go through the media with your complaints. let's keep it moving to some other things, some more on the field stuff. This weekend they celebrated Jackie Robinson Day. They've been doing it since I believe 2004. All the players throw on Jackie's number 42. And they go out and play ball, and you watch the game, and there's all kind of, pregame, clips of Jackie Robinson. Bud Selig may go to a game and wax poetic about Jackie. Fellas, let's go to Hank first. What are your thoughts on Jackie Robinson Day? Are you feeling it? Did you get swept up in the Jackie Robinson nostalgia as you watched? Where's your head at on this one?
You know what? I wish that they would have publicized it more. You know, it kind of like all of a sudden, like, oh, wow, it's Jackie Robinson Day. You know, I think that's something they should have did, you know, right before the season started to say, you know, at every ballpark, so that every fan knew what this was all about and the significance of it. I, for one, kind of like stumbled upon it and realized after I seen a couple of number 42 jerseys that everybody was commemorating Jackie Robinson. And I just think that that's something that baseball should really acknowledge more. So I think that they should make it a greater deal than what it is, because it is a significant, you know, historical point in baseball. You know, some of your greatest baseball players out there wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Jackie Robinson. You know, so I think that they should really, I don't think personally that they did a good enough job of really selling that was going to happen as soon as it was going to happen.
Devon, you got a take on Jackie Robinson Day?
I would say that baseball, probably the NBA in a different way does a really good job of acknowledging its history, but I think baseball in this one got it right. We could argue about more broad-based kind of marketing, and some of that has to do with where baseball has been prioritized within some of these major networks around ESPN and some of the other ones in terms of how they prioritize news and everything else and who has a relation to baseball. And so some of that is baseball, but some of that is also media moving baseball up the chart. But having said that, I think the way in which they do it is incredible. I think what it does also reflect for us, particularly given our background, is it also reminds us how far it's fallen in terms of, and RJ, you and I talked about this last week off the air when we were connected, that you know, we don't see the same level of enthusiasm in the African-American community around it, and we don't see as much as I would say the same level of leadership in terms of the managerial, GM, operations areas we probably should in terms of progress. And, you know, hopefully it helps us to begin. And baseball is trying to do its work in terms of reaching out into the community to get interest, particularly in the inner city. But, you know, it really gets me reflecting on that. Even though I don't watch baseball as much as I used to anymore, when we were younger, you know, everybody talks about baseball as an expensive game. You got to have bats and everything else. When we were younger, we just figured out we didn't have any money. So we mm-hmm. found a way to get bats and gloves and everything else to make or turn a stick or a broomstick into a bat or whatever. It was just that season. And so whenever I see this or experience it, I often reflect on those issues about baseball in terms of what Jackie meant, but then what that impact has been, particularly in the African-American community more recently.
Y'all coming with it. I agree with both of you guys, Hank, that they got to do a better job with the marketing, and we definitely got to do something to get more minorities and more kids from the inner city playing baseball. But I want to throw something out there that you guys may deem a little bit out of left field or controversial. Let me get your thoughts on this. They've been doing this since 2004, and they're throwing on the number 42 jerseys. And again, like I said, and we see the same clips of Jackie, and we hear the same stories. At any point, Devon, does it become, how do I want to say this? Is it just like enough already? Let's do something else.
Actually, that's a good issue to raise. I think what baseball has to do is pivot and brand it to another level in terms of opportunities to engage other. I think there needs to be more of an expression about what happened in the Negro League as part of this. So recognizing the greatness of African-American athletes pre-Jackie. So I think baseball needs to expand the platform as part of this, and I think that will allow it to be even more sustainable, because it's an opportunity to pivot in a way to talk about these issues. And also, I think, like the NBA does, I think it's also, I think they need to, as part of their marketing, really use this as a time to elevate their efforts in the inner cities. So I think it's not just about the Jackie Robinson piece, but how they leverage that moment to market these, to engage in these other conversations, and to elevate other great African-American ball players who a lot of folks don't know.
Indeed, that's my biggest hang-up right now. We've all heard Jackie's stories. It's kind of like when you have your friend and he says, "See, I have this one Indian friend. I have this one here that I cherish and hold up. But there's so many more. What about? I mean, and this is not to tarnish Jackie's legacy at all. I would never try to do that. But what if every team, rather than throwing on number 42, what if every team wore the number with the name on the back of the first African-American that they had on their team?
Yeah,
and that way you build a lot more conversation around, oh, whose number is that? Oh, that's Pupsy Green. He was the first black player for the Red Sox. You know what I mean? And you start these conversations, these new conversations that aren't being had from some of our legends who are quite frankly, being ignored at the expense of Jackie Robinson.
Yes. Yeah, I think that, see, that's something you need to get in the bud. You need to do that. And that may need to be in your book. You're about to write.
You're going to have me hired off to Major League Baseball in a minute.
Hey, that's how we do. We become that launching pad. We knew you win. But I think that is the excellent point that you're bringing out. I think, to me, that is what baseball should be doing. I mean, you're right on. To me, that, I hope somebody's listening. That's one they should take to the bank, because that's something they can do next year.
Yeah. Hey, Hank, you got anything to say on that, or any changes you would make to Jackie Robinson Day?
I absolutely do. You make a valid point. You know, one thing that baseball has failed in over the course of the last, actually 20 years maybe plus, is starting to really, you know, focus baseball back into the inner cities. You know, Devon makes, I was waxing nostalgic while I was listening to him talk. You know, he would take broom handles and tape and play ball with anything, tennis balls. You know, take an old golf ball you find, throw it up against the porch to learn how to play the infield. All those things, because that's what the baseball was king. Baseball was absolutely king. And you make a valid point. Why take Jackie Robinson, okay, take his legacy, take it for the first part of the year, if you will, but then you make it another point. Go ahead and start to recognize some of these great African-American ball players that came through because of Jackie Robinson. Somebody say something about Hank Aaron, about Willie Mays, about Willie McCovey, about Willie Horton here in Detroit, you know, Larry Doby. Some of these great ball players, some that are still alive, you know, not so much that, yes, the Negro Leagues, and baseball does a decent job of recognizing the Negro Leagues, but I'm talking about the players that came after Jackie Robinson, your Roberto Clementes, and all of these guys that made baseball great, you know, and get them back out there and let these kids see, you know, let these inner city kids see what baseball is, how baseball was, so they can, and you're right. The NBA does a fine job. You know, they change the uniforms, you know, for Latin American month, I believe is what it is. And, you know, each team will do something along those lines where they have strong Latino communities. Baseball can do the same thing. Baseball was made king, basically, by African-Americans once they were able to play, you know, in the 60s and the 70s. You know, and now I know the movement is made towards with Latino players, but they need to do a better job. I couldn't agree with you more.
That's right. If MLB wants to see any change, they got to get creative. I think we touched on it last week. It's time. I mean, we can't keep doing things the way they've been doing them and expect different results. So,
okay.
MLB, bud, please, let's get some energy, some life, and some creativity into these celebrations. Let's, fellas, did y'all see that A-Rod went on ahead and tied up Ken Griffey Jr. for the all-time home run list at, I think, 630?
That's great.
That's great. Does anybody care about the home run record anymore? Is that even being talked about? I mean, I remember when Griffey hit 630 and when Bonds hit it, it was a big deal. Is it a big deal anymore, Hank?
You know what? Here's what cheapens the home run race. Okay, steroids notwithstanding. Okay, you've got these ballparks that aren't sized as a Little League diamonds anymore, where you don't take nothing but a long fly ball and it's out the ballpark. You've got the players are bigger and stronger. You've lowered the mound. You've basically catered to the home run hitter. You know, when you hit 500 home runs in baseball, that used to be a big deal. That used to be a huge deal. 600 was unheard of. 700 was godlike. Now you got guys, you know, Barry just shatters Aaron's record, and now you got guys, you got all these guys over 630. I remember when Willie Mays, I believe, was the only other player outside of Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth to have 600 home runs. Now you got all these other players, and then to hit 60 home runs in a season, it's not the same, but again, a lot of it is how the ballparks are constructed. You got the little bandbox home ball diamonds, and so it doesn't have the allure that it used to have. No.
Well, let's do this, Hank. We're going to use Devine as our case study for the listeners. Devine is more of a passive baseball fan. Devine, before I mentioned it to you through email, did you know that A-Rod tied Griffey for 630?
No, I didn't.
Now, could you imagine when you were a baseball fan, or let's say you were even a passive fan back in the day? Could you imagine, let's say, Sosa getting a 600 and not hearing about it?
You would have heard about it. It would have been on SportsCenter at that time. It may have been in your paper. People would have talked about it at the job. It would have meant so much more to folks, and I think what's happened is people have been desensitized to the home run and are trying to find other ways to place value on players outside the home run. And I think, it's taken away from something that I think is an exciting part of the game. And people are still trying to reconcile how they feel about it. And I think we're in this weird time in baseball where people are just trying to figure out, you know, what does this all mean? Baseball just has a weird history that is in some built by hypocrisy, yet coupled in this whole idea of tradition. It's just a weird dynamic. I've never seen a game that has so much hypocrisy throughout its history, yet brands tradition like it never happened. So, you know, home run is just caught up in that whole kind of thing. And so I think that's why, you know, people are still trying to figure out how to evaluate a quality ball player, how to evaluate greatness, given everything we've been through.
Damn, Devine, you're preaching today, boy. MLB's going to shut us down in a minute. You keep it up.
You know, I had to come in here and bring my A game, man. I could come in here and slip and slide. You know, I knew I was in with the real experts. I admire y'all still so much. I feel like I study for this more than I've studied for any other show to make sure.
We're not even a half hour in, and you done called them out on hypocrisy. Damn. Okay. I like where you're going with. I like where you're going with it. But my thing is, while we have been jaded with the steroids thing. And A-Rod gets a bad rap. I think he deserves his due. While we can all admit we've been through the steroids era, not a lot of cats yet and still are going to hit 630 home runs. And for that, I think he gets a little slighted because the guy is still a talent, regardless of what the hell's going on.
Right.
And I would add that part of the slight is what I was talking about. Part of the slight is A-Rod. He is like
right.
The most misunderstood star I've ever seen. That he's granted everything. You can't attribute all of his greatness to steroids. By all accounts, he had a short stint with it. And in football, if you had a short stint, that would not hurt your greatness at all. Seems like in baseball, if you have a short stint, that's probably well documented that it was a short stint with him. That it's pained him in so many ways, and some of that is he's just a misunderstood superstar.
Right.
I'm not sure if it was somebody else that people might not talk about it, but I just think that he's one of those misunderstood superstars that just never gets the love, no matter what he does.
You call it misunderstood. I call it persecuted by the media. Because, I mean, look at Andy Pettit, his short stint. And everybody's waxing Pettit. They can't wait to see him back on the mound.
That's right.
They can't wait to see Pettit back. But A-Rod, no, we're not talking about your 630 home runs. Forget about it.
But, see, again, I want to add about A-Rod. A-Rod is pretty polarizing. If you just think about it, okay, he signs one of the richest deals in baseball when he was with Texas, okay? Never really did produce there as much as they thought he was going to. Then you had the whole thing where he was going to go to Boston, okay? They were trying to figure out a way to get him there. Then he ends up in New York. Now, he's never really been a fan favorite in New York. It's always been Derek Jeter's team. And if you recall, when he first went to New York, you know, they was talking about who was going to play shortstop because he played short. So all of those things. So is he a likable player? You know, is he? I think the media kind of, you know, has him as aloof and doing all these different things, all these different women. But Derek Jeter does it, but he's beloved in New York. And then he didn't produce very well in the playoffs. Hasn't produced in the playoffs. So yet, while his numbers are great, you know, in baseball standards, the player himself, and then you find out he was taking steroids, which I don't really think made that much difference in his performance to the point, because I think he's a great talent. But still, I think that because he's not what you would call a liked player, that's why his achievement just kind of went under the radar. 630 home runs is a hell of a lot of home runs. I don't care what nobody says. That's a great achievement.
That's right. And it's funny, they hate on him so much, I've actually begun to start liking the guy. Just because he gets hated on so much.
Mm-hmm.
but let's keep it moving. We got a lot of show and a little bit of time. So let's jump off into the next segment, If Gambling Were Legal. And what we're going to do, what I want to do with this segment is I want to get your guys' opinion. I know it's early in the season. We got a small sample size. But our guest last week, Jonah Carey, He wrote an article on Grantland.com, and he talks about the Los Angeles Dodgers, and I guess one of their announcers after one of their most recent games said, go ahead and print off playoff tickets. We're going to the playoffs. At the time, I think the Dodgers had won 6 in a row. So he was already calling his shot 6 games in. So Jonah Carey kind of took him to task. He broke it down like only he could. And what we're going to do is we're going to go through the division leaders as of today, and I want to get you guys' opinion if they're real or are they fake. See what you guys think. And let's go ahead and start. Let's start with the Dodgers. They're 9-2 in the National League West. Matt Kemp is hitting at a crazy rate. I mean, he's got the love affair of our own Hank going on. So, Hank, 9-2 Dodgers. Are they for real?
I believe that the Dodgers have a shot. I don't believe the Dodgers are going to win the division, okay? I think they got off to a great start. I don't think they're going to win the division, but I think they were given they've got a legitimate opportunity to make the playoffs this year simply because of what's going on in San Francisco. I think that the news today is that Brian Wilson's got to have Tommy John surgery, and he's out for the season. San Fran wasn't getting off to a good start in the first place. As a couple of teams that we looked at in the National League, that's struggling. I think the Dodgers. But I told you I like the Dodgers anyway. You guys laughed at me, so I think they have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs.
Devon, are you a believer in Magic Johnson and the Dodgers?
I'm a believer. I think that. The the rest of that division has as many flaws as you can say. Obviously, I think San Francisco may settle itself and make a move. But I would say L.A. Has a great chance. You know, with the laser show keeping them in there, you know, you got Kershaw. You know, they got a legitimate ace. And then, you know, people like Jad Billingsley, and I don't know if he can keep it going, but he's 2-0 right now, you know, at a, you know, under a 1 ERA. You know, I think if they can get the pitching going along with that, but I just think that that division I felt like was wide open, and I think if they can put a few more weeks together, together that they can allow themselves to have a couple bumpy kind of streaks that allow them to regain and resell. So I think it's going to be key to put a couple more good weeks together, maybe stretch just a little bit, that allow them to kind of adjust if they have a 2-3-game, 4-game slide, they can get back in it. But, you know, they got an ace who can be a streak killer, you know, a loss killer in terms of you get 2 or 3 games, they say you can have somebody like Kershaw come in and stop that loss. So you always need an ace like that to get you back on track.
Well, y'all love putting me on the other side of the argument. I'm not a believer in the Dodgers. You know, they have an outside shot of making the playoffs, and that's only because they're in a weak National League. But I think it's only a matter of time before Arizona takes this division and runs with it. And, you know, I look at the Dodgers' schedule, and they've kind of feasted on some weak opponents. They've beat San Diego Padres 7 times. And they played Pittsburgh 3 times.
Yes.
We could beat some of those guys. So I'm not a believer. I'm not all in. I still think that they have too many holes in that lineup. But I am a believer in Matt Kemp and Andre Ether. Other than that, this is no go. I'm going Arizona all the way.
Clayton Kershaw.
Let's keep it moving Let's go to the NL East. This is an interesting team, and I think I already know how Hank feels. He's expressed his opinion on these boys many a times. 9-3, Washington Nationals. What do you got, Hank?
Hell no. I don't believe in the Nationals. I think the Nationals is playing good ball, but I think that there's just a couple of teams that just haven't gotten it together yet. Atlanta's not playing. They're just playing a little bit above 500. Philly hasn't come out the gate real well, and I believe in that pitching staff in Philadelphia. And so I may be in the minority there, but I think Washington getting off. I don't believe in Washington later on in the season. I just believe that that's one team that I don't think they have enough yet. You know, your same argument with the Dodgers. I feel the same thing about the Nationals. I think they've gone with a lot of retreads on the back end of their pitching staff that's going to cost them. So I'm not buying it.
You think they can make the playoffs?
No.
Nothing.
I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to make a push. If they make the playoffs, it's only because of the new playoff format. And somebody will have had to collapse, in my opinion.
Devine, what's your opinion on the Nationals?
It's not that I'm not a non-believer, but I think that, you know, this division is crazy. You know, Ozzy's lost his mind in Miami. The Mets have found their mind in New York. Philly is unperforming. So, I think this division, I think over the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to be talking to them kind of like the AL East. I think because of the different types of folks that are happening, you know, what's happening in Atlanta, I think they're going to retool Ozzy in Miami. So I think this is going to be going down in Washington, waking up. I think they're built on good bones. You know, Strasburg is back, performing well here early, recovering from his injury. So I think, you know, beginning that pitching together. LaRoche is starting early. He's usually a strong second half player, but he's batting .333, 13 RBI. So they got some pieces that I think are solid. I just think that division, and I go back to what Hank said, I think Philadelphia is going to wake up. And also Philadelphia, if they got to move some folks to create something happen, they got some pieces they can move. And I think Philly's going to make a late charge and get back in there. So, but I think they'll be in it the entire season and wouldn't be surprised if they got one of those final playoff spots.
You know what? I agree with you, Devon. I think that they're prime to get a playoff into the playoffs this year. My take on the Nationals, I'm gonna borrow a line that Hank said earlier when he talked about the Red Sox, and when I talk about the Phillies, I should say, and they are what I expected them to be, the Phillies. That is, they got an old lineup. Placido Polanco's not hitting. Chase Utley's out. Ryan Howard's out. I don't expect them to be world beaters this season, and therefore, with the Nationals pitching staff, I think this is their year to at least make a run at the playoffs. I mean, they got Gio Gonzalez, they got Steven Strasburg, Jordan Zimmermann, their number two starting pitcher. A lot of people don't know about, but he can deal with the rotation, the pitching rotation that they've set up. I mean, there's not a lot of dominant offenses anymore in that division. Like I said, Philly is down. The Mets offense, I mean, if you're counting on Jason Bay and David Wright to do something for you, good luck. Who else you got? Atlanta Braves, you know, they have a problem scoring runs if their guys aren't getting on base. I'm a believer. I think Washington, I'm not saying they'll win the division because, you know, I'm still high on my Marlins, but I think they can make a run. So Hank, I got to disagree with you, brother.
Okay. We'll see.
Last team in the National League, we got the St. Louis Cardinals. They're coming in at 8-3. Devon, you're not in Cardinal country. Forgive me, Devon. What's your thoughts on St. Louis?
St. Louis is like a good old pair of shoes. You know how you go out and you buy new shoes, you think the new thing is going to look good, but when it comes down, when you got that moment, you need something you can depend on. You put them same old shoes on because they deliver. That's St. Louis. They where we think they are. When you look at the rest of the division, and I know Mike isn't here. He loves Cincy. Even in a transition year, St. Louis just knows how to win as an organization. And that was the whole thing I said about with Pujols leaving. There's certain organizations. St. Louis is like the baseball version of the Steelers. They got the bones and the makeup of an organization that knows how to keep it moving. And so I think they'll still be there at the end. I just think they just, for some reason, figure it out. And they're demonstrating they did it before La Russa, and they're going to demonstrate that they can do it after La Russa.
You know what? Coming into the show, I was trying to think of an analogy for St. Louis, and I think you just summed it up perfectly. An old pair of shoes, you know you can go to. I looked at their schedule. I mean, they're 8-3, and they've done it all against division opponents outside of that one-game series they had with Miami. So, I mean, they're... While it's the smallest of small sample sizes, they're showing us that, you know, you don't have to bring it in our division if you think you're going to take us out. So I'm on board as well. I wasn't before the season. I was with Mike and the Cincinnati Reds, and, you know, they could still make a run and make the playoffs. But St. Louis, you're going to have to bring your lunch if you want to beat St. Louis. Hank, are we all three in unison on the Cardinals?
We are, and I think that what you look at with the Cardinals is, you know, they are the class of that division. You know, you're looking at Milwaukee, they're playing right now, they're just a little bit below 500. But when you look at what St. Louis has, but moreover what they have coming back. Okay, you got Adam Wainwright who started out, he looks good. He looks really good. You know, they're looking for Carpenter to come back. You're going to have two aces at the top of that lineup, at that roster late in the year. When you look at the rest of that division, you know, we did a lot of talk about Cincinnati. But when you look at what they got to feast upon this year, you got Pittsburgh, Houston, and Chicago. You know, that's just fat meat just to chew on for the rest of the year. And, you know, you look at how St. Louis is playing in the right, and they're playing like champions. They're playing good baseball, and I expect it to last the rest of the year.
And keep an eye out on Carlos Beltran, guys. He's got 5 home runs already. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago as a sleeper pick for the Hall of Fame. He's doing exactly what you would expect out of a Hall of Fame player with 5 jacks this early in the season. Filling in for Pujols quite nicely, I'd say.
He is.
All right, let's jump over to the American League. I wanted to start with the National League because I don't see as much intrigue in the American League, but what the hell, we'll go through it anyways. 9-2 Texas Rangers. Are they for real, Hank?
Now, wait a minute. I mean, I can't even make a compelling argument as to why they're not. If anybody watched that game last night or watched highlights of it, of them just dismantling Boston in the Boston Massacre, as I'll call it, that team is scary. They are scary good. I mean, there's only 11 games in, 12 games now, and they won tonight, I believe. And, I mean, they've got a wicked offense. They've got good starting pitching. They've got a great back end in their bullpen, and they are scary. And I know we did a lot of talking, but just given what we've seen early, you could say that Texas, of any team in the American League, is primed to win 100 ball games. I didn't realize how good they really are. You got to watch them. I mean, they are a very good baseball team, and they're going to be very difficult to beat.
Devon, Texas.
They are who we thought they were.
That's all I need to say. I heard y'all talk about them at the beginning of the season, and you know, Darvish and all that. I mean, they are who we thought they were, and they're gonna continue to be that.
Hey, you can't argue with Uncle Ron and two straight World Series appearances. Well, it's like an old episode of Marlin. The boys are bad. I don't think we need to go much into that one. I mean, the offense, the pitching, they're good to go. That's prime time right there.
Mm-hmm.
But next up to bat, Motown, Motor City, Detroit Tigers. We'll get outsiders at the first crack at this one. Devon, what are your thoughts on the Tigers? Are they for real?
They are who we thought they were.
Y'all know that, you know, there's about one team, you know, I'm from Michigan, and there's really one team I support. There's a couple teams I support, the Tigers and the Pistons. And they just doing it. I think that, you know, you always, no matter what, every year, and I know y'all debating this, you always got to watch for Minnesota and where they are and just make sure they're out of it. Somehow they always find a way to do some things. The White Sox, I think, will right the ship. I just think that Detroit just has too much going on in terms of pitching and everything else. And Verlander just got his first victory the other day. But, you know, I just think that they have the ability to shut things out. And Leland is just, you know, I remember him way back in the day cause when he was doing his things, I believe, back in the day with the Pirates. He's just always been that type of guy who can really understand and manage, and I just love to see him get a World Series.
That's right. You know what impressed me about the Tigers? This weekend they played Chicago White Sox. And Miguel Cabrera went 0 for the whole series. I don't believe he got a hit the whole series. And they were able to win a game even with Miguel not playing at his best. I'm a believer. I mean, they got the bats, and it's more than just Cabrera and Fielder. I mean, Alex Avila can stroke it. I won't go down the whole lineup and steal some of Hank's thunder, but Detroit's for real. There it is. Hank, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to just take this approach that if Leland continues to play Rayburn and Laird back to back, I mean, Inge and Laird back to back, I'm going to have problems. But having said that, the Detroit Tigers are for real. And to me, they're still not playing their best baseball yet. And you know, you know, Fister's been out. You know, they had a very nice showing from their young rookie Smiley last night, went six innings with no earned runs. They've got some pieces in place, and really, you know, it's a one horse race in the Central. I mean, you're going to see some jockeying and some noise try to be raised from Chicago, maybe Minnesota early or the Indians. But quite frankly, when you go down to the end, you know, I just don't think none of those teams have. I know they don't have enough to deal with the Tigers, and so. Yeah, you know, they are who we thought they are. They were. So yeah, I'm right with you.
Seeing that we're making these predictions here, Hank, let me throw this out there at you. Brandon Inge, is he on the roster June 1st?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. What Jim Leland does very well is he really gives all his players a chance to play. I mean, I don't think that when you look in the playoffs last year and you see Don Kelly all of a sudden stroking the ball, that was indicative of the fact that he was able to play during the season. And you start getting production out of players. Now, what keeps Brandon Inge on a major league roster in the first place is because he is versatile defensively and he can catch the ball. But having said that, you know, if this team hits as we think they're going to hit, there's no reason why Santiago or Rayburn can't just fill that spot. I just don't see how with this roster that you can really hold Brandon Inge on the roster spot. If you start looking at making moves down the stretch, he's got to go. He's the most expendable player you got right now.
You know, when I saw him starting the day, I knew, I was like, okay, this is three games in a row Brandon Inge has been in the starting lineup. I said, Leland's trying to get his boy some rope to hang himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like before the season, Leland said, if Brandon Inge doesn't hit, he's not going to be on this team.
Right.
He had a tough time hitting in spring training, but they said he was injured, so they gave him a break. They brought him onto the club. He's batting 125. Granted, he's only played a couple games, but he's not hitting. I don't see him on this roster after June 1st. And I think Leland is strategically allowing him to hang himself.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. I think it frustrates the fans around here simply because they're like, what the hell is he doing playing now? You know, it's like, why is he playing? You made all these moves. You got some players that can fill that spot and hit the ball. You know, what is Brandon Inge doing? If you're going to do that, go get one of your players from the – go get Danny Worth. Bring him up to play. You know, he's got the same numbers.
All right, let's keep it moving before all the radios outside of Detroit turn us off. What about the last team, AL East? Surprise, surprise. We got the Baltimore Orioles in the lead in the AL East. Devon, are the Orioles for real?
What I will say is that, kind of like I talked about Washington, I think that they have the bones. The other thing is they have Buck Showalter. I call him the fixer. He's kind of like Collins in basketball. You bring this guy in to get you to the championship, but he never coaches you in the championship. So this might not, if they ever make it to the World Series, Buck won't be there to coach the World Series or manage the World Series. But he will, he does the right thing to help you build a winner. So I think they'll be competitive, but, you know, I think there's too many good teams in the East. I mean, Toronto's coming around. The Yankees, we know about. Boston, I think, given everything we said at the opening of the show, I think they'll find a way to right the ship, and I think things will get closer. But I think Baltimore, this will be a good next step season. You'll know at the end of the season that they're clearly going in the right direction. And that's the way I kind of see them.
Can they make it to the playoffs?
When I'm looking at the rest of the – I think the Angels are going to make a run later on in the season. I don't think they might catch Texas, but I think they might position themselves for the playoffs. They have an outside chance, but I'd say no.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me?
Hank, Baltimore in the playoffs. Are they for real? Can they make it?
They're not going to make it, and that's a shame because I really like the Baltimore Orioles. I like the Toronto Blue Jays, too. It's kind of fun early in the year to see these two teams atop of the East. But let's face facts here, okay? Last week we had Jonah Carey talk about the Tampa Bay Rays. They're not just going to run away and hide, you know, this season. They're not playing good ball, and you know the Yankees are going to be the Yankees, okay, all year long. So you got to deal with those two teams, even though they haven't gotten off to a good start. I think Baltimore is going to raise enough hell to make it hard for some other teams, a.k.a. Boston, to get into the playoffs. But I'm with Devon. I don't expect the Angels have spent all that money and not make a playoff run. And I think that's what's going to hurt the young Orioles going down the stretch. I think that you're going to have these other teams that right now are prepared. They're already ready, playoff ready, to make their playoff run. And I just don't think Baltimore have enough yet to do it. They got some very young, nice young talent on that team. You know, Adam Jones is going to be a player. I like that kid, but not yet. Not in the East.
Yeah, Hank, I'll add, is with their strength that you just point out, they're strong up the middle. That's the one thing Buck knows. Get you strong up the middle, and they are strong in the middle, so they got a future because they're strong in the right spots.
Right.
Look at Devon bringing it. Okay, I see you.
You
know, I had to look at this thing a little closer. When I saw Baltimore was leading the AL East, I had to say, what in the heck is going on? And you know, some things jumped out at me. Their ace, their number, or I shouldn't call him ace, their number one pitcher, Jake Arrieta, he's got a 2.66 ERA. Now, this guy has never had an ERA below 3.50. So that tells me this is not going to continue. He's going to give up some runs soon. Their number two pitcher, Tommy Hunter, he's played in the league a while. He was on Texas's teams that made some runs. He's got a 2.77 ERA right now, and that's almost a run lower than his lowest ERA. So these guys cannot keep up this pace. I don't believe Baltimore is for real, not at all, not in the least bit. I think this is just them making a nice run in a small sample size.
Mm.
And another little stat I like to look at is runs scored versus runs allowed. Everybody knows the point in baseball is to score more runs than your opponent. And right now, for a point of reference, Texas has scored 63 runs and allowed 27 runs. And people a lot smarter than me, they'll look at that and they'll say, okay, based on those runs, Texas should have about a 9-2 record, which is right around where they are. Baltimore has given up 53 runs, and they've allowed 46. Not a large gap, not a lot of difference, which says that they're actually getting quite lucky. And their record, based on the runs they've scored and the runs allowed, should be about 6-5. So they're going to fall. I think they're going to fall hard, and I look for them to be in the cellar yet again. But, fellas, we're running up against it. We can't leave without giving you our dog of the week. So we're going to jump right into this dog of the week.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital dog of the week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
There it is. We'll let the newcomer go first. Devon, who you got for your dog of the week?
My dog of the week is Jamie Moyer. Oldest pitcher to win, 49 years old. He was, working with an ESPN last year, 5-3 victory over San Diego. He may not do much after this, but this week he's my dog of the week.
All right, I like it. Hank, who's your dog of the week?
My dog of the week is, and also it's going to be a happy trails to Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. He announced his retirement today. Pudge was part of the Detroit Tigers 2006 resurgence to get to the World Series. So, Pudge, you are my dog.
Indeed. My dog of the week, I'm going to go with Dustin Pedroia. He established himself in that clubhouse, let everybody know, he stood up in my eye and let Bobby Valentine know that this is how we do it in Boston and this is how it's going to be done. We got about a minute left. Devon, you got a series of the week. I know you're, like we said earlier, you're a passive baseball fan. What series has you excited this week?
Now, I don't have a series of the week, but you may have stretched me beyond my capability. But my series of the week is whoever the Tigers playing this weekend.
You picked a good one because they got Texas. And that's actually my series of the week. If you're a baseball fan, if you're kind of a baseball fan, you definitely want to check this out. especially Saturday. Justin Verlander's going up against Neftali Feliz. It should be a good one. So check out that series. It starts Thursday. It's going all weekend. And you've just listened to another episode of Inside the Park. Check us back same time next week. Peace.
Peace.